what tipped the scales in your mind with that number four pick and taking it to that spot?
Well, I think it was talked about quite a bit how strong this draft was at the top for D-men. Saw four go in a row, five of the top nine. We probably thought maybe even six were going to go in the top 10. Can say that we had them, a good group of those D-men close together. But when we looked at all of our individual lists, every one on our staff had Rudolph in the top three or four on their list. Our analytics department had him in their top four. I heard some talk about the fact we didn't interview him until after the combine. Most years, Central Scouting asks you not to harass too many of the guys at the top of the draft if you're not picking at the top of the draft, but we spent a lot of time on him for the past couple of years. We got two of our younger scouts, but a couple guys that are very valuable in our organization, Graham Beamish and Lucas Sutter, who scoured through all of the CHL and Hockey Canada camps and events over the years. They knew him inside and out as a player and a person. I would say Kevin Devine, myself, and Jason Nightingale saw him each at least 10 times. Lucas Sutter and the Sutter family are pretty much synonymous with the Red Deer area. Lucas lives in Calgary, so we knew the kid's character inside and out. We think of very highly of him as a person. The hockey sense combo with the compete and character made an impression on us. As I said, a lot of good defensemen in this draft. It's not hard to figure out. He was the top defenseman in the draft for us.
Garrett, when the trade was made to go 27-20, was Morozov kind of the guy you had in your head that would be there at 27, but there's a good chance he'd be there at 20? Was that kind of the guy you were thinking of?
I talked about it a couple times, I think, definitely last week when I was on the radio. There was a group of players that, I told Jarmo we felt strongly about that, and almost a drop off for us. And I was concerned what would happen in that next group of players in terms of our passion for the players. And Morozov was, the last one that was available for us in that upper tier of players. And obviously valued the size, the natural center qualities, the two-way game. Another kid, I'm sure Yarmo talked about it, high character reports, came over here at 15 years old, learned the language, lived by himself, accelerated, did 2 years worth of school in 1 year to be able to accelerate into Miami last year. Coaching staff at Miami, his USHL coaches, all pretty good contacts of ours. So we thought the world of the player and the person again. So it was exciting for us that he was still there.
How unique is it what he did? I know there's some young kids in the NCAA, but to play a full year at 17, just what does that show you?
No, it's obviously rare. Just think about if one of us moved over to Russia at 15 years old, lived by ourselves, and then tried to manage the academic part of it, accelerating class-wise, and then you're trying to play hockey at the same time in the USHL, and then going into college hockey this year as the youngest player in college hockey, and playing meaningful minutes in the NCHC, which is arguably the hardest conference in college hockey and one of the best conferences, preparing players for the NHL. And he's playing first, second-line center minutes the entire season, trusted in all situations, PK, 4-on-4, taking tough matchups, D-zone starts, and then still being able to produce at a decent clip for a 17-year-old.
Marniak, Zonyoth, and Dumont, what about each of those three players stood out to select them to help the organization?
Well, Zonyoth, our European scouts, did a great job on Frank Musil, our Finnish scouts, Jarkko and Tomi. He's a really interesting story. Hungarian, but playing in Finland. and actually played at the men's world championships. Very competitive player. Another guy that's got a good two-way game. You know, we think he needs to work on his skating a little bit. You know, we'll have a long path with him, obviously. But there's some intangibles there that we really like, and he gets to the inside of the game, gets around the net, and he still takes care of his own end, and again, natural center qualities. Dumont, a guy that kind of during the course of the year progressed in Drummondville, very much a player that gets to the inside of the game, almost a mini power forward approach to his style of play. Was a kid that 2 years ago was 135, 140 pounds, up to 170 plus pounds right now. Apparently, even in the last 3 months, has maybe put on another 10, 12 pounds. He could be, we'll see when he gets to camp here, could be, you know, touching maybe 180 pounds right now. A late, you know, very young for the draft, an August birth date. So we're betting on some more physical development upside there. And then, you know, the ability just to get inside already at his size, it's only going to get better as he gets a little bit bigger, stronger.
How about the
last? Murniak's another interesting story. You know, came over here at a relatively young age, going into Boston College this incoming fall. Suffered a concussion in St. John this year, missed about 2 months, 2.5 months. But we've all seen him so much over the years because he's been at two World Juniors. Kevin Devine's seen him a lot in the Quebec League. We've all seen him at the under 18 level as well. I'm going to start sounding a little bit redundant here, and it almost as if we targeted a lot of the same players. But again, a center, natural two-way game. Another guy that's got to work on his skating a little bit. Led the Latvian players in ice time at the under 18s, coming back from his concussion this year. Just got back from the men's world championships, played a few games with the men over there, coming off of an impressive under 18s for Latvia and the world junior championships. So I'm sure he got some credibility with the men's national team in that regard. And like so many Latvians, he's kind of committed to, you know, playing a team game. But we're excited to see, you know, what he does. It was a big step for the Boston College staff, who we put a lot of faith in and we're very close with, to bring him in this fall. Well, I think it's going to become, you know, almost a new model or path when you look at it. 150, 160 players, it starts going into the CHL. So the CHL probably got an extra 160-plus players this year coming into the CHL that they might not have gotten otherwise from the USHL, the prep school leagues in the U.S., and from Europe. Kids that were kind of targeting college as their ultimate goal. Now they get to go have a stepping, you know, stone into the CHL for a year or two, and then go up a level, challenge themselves playing against older players in college hockey. You look at some of the incoming classes in college hockey this year at Michigan State and Denver. I mean, I think Michigan State had 5 first rounders drafted yesterday, another couple kids early in the second round. Denver's entire incoming class, I think of 8 players, are all drafted players next year. So college hockey's going to keep getting better and better, and it's a great transition. I mean, it's not the only path, but it's a great transition to players to step up a level before they get to the American Hockey League or the NHL. Well, there's a couple things going on. The USHL lost a lot of players this year. I think it's still a very good league. But trying to handicap a little bit, the maybe a dip in the competition level in that league. And then college has always been, I think our analytics department would tell you, is a difficult evaluation for young players playing college hockey. And that's where I think they do a great job of looking at the underlying metrics and numbers rather than the raw production, obviously. But even those can be, you know, tough to attain a certain level when you're a 17-year-old playing in college hockey. Your minutes, you know, might not be where you want them to be. There's been great examples the past couple of years of some kids that, you know, I think across the NHL there would have been some doubts on, you know, how the kid was progressing, and then he takes a massive jump from his freshman to sophomore season. And, you know, Europe, you can even make a case with some of the under 20 leagues over there with a fair amount of the top prospects departing early from those leagues. How do you handicap those versus the past years? So it's an adjustment. I mean, I think we're all learning on the fly, but I do think this is going to be the new world in terms of a development model for NHL players going forward or NHL prospects. It wasn't necessarily a priority, but we would always give a high preference for centers. It doesn't necessarily mean they're going to, you know, play center when they get to the American Hockey League or the NHL level. But I think, as we've all said many times, it's a lot easier to shift from the center to the wing than to try to turn a winger into a center. And then just the style of play with the centers we took this year was more important to us, how they play the game.
You only had 5 picks, up to number 4 in the trade. But how different was the, you know, the period before the draft? Fewer picks than you've had in many years, and lower picks than you've had. It was kind of a different mentality of preparation.
Very unique this year. I wouldn't say the preparation was much different for us. I mean, we go through the same process. Especially the top 60 or 70 names on our list. We went through the exact same process this year as a year that we would have had 3 picks or no picks in the first round. It certainly got a little bit interesting. I would have never predicted, a month or two ago that we would have been picking at 4 and 20. I think if you asked the entire amateur scouting staff, we would have been fine if we traded all those picks away, if we were making our NHL team better. But Yarmo and I talked about this an awful lot. If there were trades that were available to make our team better, to either move down or trade the pick outright, there would have been zero hesitation, and we would have been very excited about that. I didn't hear anything that really helped our team in terms of making an impact and making our team better, right now. So I think that's, ultimately why we ended up picking at 4 and 20.
You drafted a guy 2 years ago at Cleaver, and you were excited about him then. Now that you've had 2 years of development in college hockey, what have you seen from him in his development? Has he taken a big leap?
He was the first sophomore ever in the NCHC to win the defensive defenseman in that league this past season. And did it as a true sophomore. 2 world junior teams, a gold medal a year ago, leaned on heavily this year in all top matchups, defensive situations, both at the world junior level and at Duluth. I mean, we've been thrilled with his development. His puck game is continuing to improve. I think there's been a little uptick in the production. I think he's pushing a little bit more for offense. He has the ability to do that. We're thrilled with him as a prospect. If he wanted to come out this year, he would have had an NHL contract, waiting for him. I think he felt like another year in that league would suit him well. And, we're never going to push a kid to make that decision one way or another. He knows what's best for himself. But we view him as, a pretty high-end NHL prospect for us on projection.
Like you were saying, barely a week ago from 27 to 20, then all of a sudden you have the 4th pick. How just exciting, energizing was that for you and your group to suddenly, out of almost nowhere, have those picks?
Yeah, it's exciting from an amateur scouting perspective. You know, those type of players have the ability to make a big impact on your organization. We're not concerned, or it's not our job to figure out how quickly that guy's going to get to the NHL to help our NHL team. But obviously, when you're picking in the top 10, you can envision that player getting there a little bit quicker and making an impact earlier than a kid in the third, fourth round, or late first round, or early second round. It's not always the case. So that was exciting, the possibility, as I said, in our minds. You know, time will tell, but we got the best defenseman in the draft. That's pretty valuable, both as an asset and I think in the not too distant future to be able to help our NHL team. Publicly, again, a guy I don't think gets talked about too much, maybe at least outside of Buffalo. We consider him almost a plug-and-play prospect. The day he's ready to come over, which I think, you know, should be next year, has middle six qualities that I think will be pretty unique for our organization. When we talk sometimes about, you know, some pieces that have gone out of this organization, or even some of the pieces that have come in you know, the last year or two, you don't hear his name mentioned much. I think he's very much a guy that can come in and make an impact from the day he gets over here.
From a scouting perspective, what was the goal of this year's draft to fulfill organizational needs, whether those were skill, philosophical, or maybe something else?
Yarmo's pretty clear about this, and he's been doing it for a long time. You're first and foremost, you have to continue to feed the pipeline all the time. If you don't draft well, your organization is going to suffer, you know, pretty quickly. Whether it's from an asset perspective or just continuing to fill in the pipeline from underneath. I mean, you see even, you know, Rochester, for how deep we were there with, you know, first-round picks and other players from the mid-rounds that were good prospects for us, between them coming up and playing in the NHL or losing a really good prospect like Wahlberg, the next player has to be coming pretty quickly to be able to backfill those spots. So I think it's fine, good players. They're always going to be good assets for the organization. And then you just have to keep, you know, filling in your depth. And some of these players are going to push through to the NHL level sooner than we probably even thought.
Is there anything different or any adjustment you guys made under Yarmo? Like, obviously, you've run your process the way you have, and it's gotten really well for you. But any tweaks that he made since he's come in for the draft
run? Some global perspective on some things. That he learned over the years, from doing the same job for many years. But he was pretty happy and complimentary of us from day one when he got here about our process and what he saw in terms of identifying talent. You know, far from perfect, just continue to get better is his message to us all the time, which we're trying to do. And, you know, again, time will tell with some of the picks if we're improving each year on that.